Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Cold outside. What is this, January or February? Hi, it's John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio downtown.
Loud hammer.
Beautiful Chicago. I'll take actually some cold and some sunshine and blue skies, white puffy clouds over Lake Michigan. You've seen worse days. All right, everybody, you get your choice. You either get yesterday, fog so thick you couldn't see across the street in the middle part of the day, but like 40 degrees, or you get single digits, sunshine, blue skies. Jen, which do you take? What's your druthers?
Oh, gosh. That's a tough one.
Poke me in the eye with a sharp stick or hit me over the head with a ball peen hammer.
I don't mind if it's warmer and it's rainier. Today it was hard. It was hard out there with the wind, though.
Man, it was.
Yeah.
I didn't wear a hat because I wanted my hair to work later tonight. So I'm walking from the L stop to the radio station, and I thought, wow, I should have compromised on the hair because that was punishing. It was a very cold walk. Speaking of,
what do you mean by, oh, I see, you didn't want to wear a hat?
Yeah, because then my hair, which I just got cut by Bertha yesterday, would be askew, and I'm going to the gala at the auto show this evening.
No fair. Well, we could, yeah.
Not much I can
You can't help me with that there, can you?
No.
Speaking of cold places, we have a communal refrigerator here at WGN Radio. I don't want to live or work in a place where people are stealing other people's food from the corporate refrigerator. Stephanie, our manager here, sent out, I thought, just a so delicately and poignantly written email to the staff. It said that the, is this it here? I want to quote her directly on this. No, never mind. But it goes something like this. The refrigerator is in a communal place or is a communal thing, but the food inside it is not. And that was all she said. I thought, touche. Well put. But who is it that steals and eats other people's food?
Yeah.
People who are here overnight when there's no access to anything else.
I just don't understand that. Because you just know it's so wrong. You know the person that owns that will notice it. It's not a crime without a victim. It's very personal. And you know what? I don't want to eat your food. Say you have a meatloaf sandwich. I like my meatloaf my way. And you like your meatloaf your way. Even if I steal your delicious-looking meatloaf sandwich, maybe I don't like it.
Do you want to know what happened, though? Do you want to know why that email was sent out?
Okay.
So,
wait a minute. You're going to say it on the air?
Oh, well, I mean,
I assume somebody took somebody's food.
Well, it wasn't necessarily somebody took somebody's food. There was a closed thing of creamer that somebody had in there, and somebody went and opened it and used it.
Well, now that's
it wasn't even opened before.
Okay, fine. But I would say that in the grand scheme of food theft crimes, sharing uninvited a condiment is not as bad as stealing a meatloaf sandwich.
That's just gross if you have somebody's leftovers. But this situation is just weird because it's like, hey, it's not even open yet. But maybe they were waiting to bring that home.
The funny thing is, if it was creamer that was opened, you could have used it, put the cap back on. They never would have noticed.
Yeah.
Same with ketchup, mustard, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That one doesn't bother me as much. I'll be honest with you.
I think ketchup and mustard, that kind of goes without saying that it's communal, though, isn't it?
That's how I feel about it.
Hit pause on that for just a minute. Really? I mean, I get that. I'm feeling you there, but really? So if I put a bottle of ketchup in there, I need to know that it's going to be used by other people.
Well, like in our refrigerators here, I know that, you know, various restaurants who have brought us food for games and stuff like that will actually send a full bottle of ketchup or mustard. So then we keep it and we all have it for X amount of months.
Right. That may belong to nobody anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, if you have an entire bottle of ketchup and I got some fries, I'm not saying I do this, but I'm just saying, and I have
sure
some fries.
Sounds like you do this.
I'm just saying I wouldn't think any less of somebody if they did do that, I guess is what I'm saying.
I got that. Yeah. So if in fact, if you came upon me using your ketchup, you wouldn't bust me for that. You'd say, "Absolutely, that's my ketchup."
Not.
But help yourself, John. It's just,
go for
it's
it.
Ketchup, and it's yeah. It's not like you're going to make a meal out of ketchup, right? It's just a side thing.
Hope not.
You know, unless you had the last squirt of it, and the owner of that was walking around with some fries that were begging for ketchup. I don't know if companies train cameras on the refrigerator, if it's a real problem. Has that happened where you are? 312-981-7200. What do you do when you catch that person? I presume you just sit them down with HR and say, hey, listen, you can't do that. Any more than you can steal stuff from the company. You can't steal other, and if you do it again, you'll get fired. I suppose that happens, huh?
So we had a birthday cake in our fridge here for like 2 weeks that didn't get cut. By that time, it would be, you know, awfully stale, I'm assuming. And I held myself back every single day. Every single day, I was like, you know, if I just took a corner, nobody would really care. It's been here for a couple of weeks.
But I okay. loved it. I just got a text message, sorry, from a listener saying, it's like in Friends, the turkey gravy sandwich, that was 312. And I just quoted Friends this morning. I said, where's my sandwich? And because I had left it in there yesterday. And then Julia in traffic goes, the what does he call it? He calls it the moist maker in Friends. Somebody, and then we got the email after that.
Did somebody steal your sandwich?
No, I found it. I just didn't look with my eyes. I looked without my eyes.
Yeah, I've been there and done that.
Is that why you said, oh, thank God, when you opened up the fridge earlier and found your sandwich?
Precisely.
Said, yeah. Like, it's still here. Oh.
I actually have, this is a different station that I worked at. This was several years ago, but there was a woman that was fired because she continually stole toilet paper.
Oh, toilet paper. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And was warned by the news director to not do that anymore and continued to do it, knowing full well that there was cameras there.
Yeah. If you work at a TV station that has cameras
everywhere.
That's what TV stations kind of do. They put stuff on TV with cameras. So maybe they, and they have journalists, like, you know.
Investigative.
Stick your top reporter on the case. Find out who's stealing toilet paper at Channel 22. An investigative piece, 4-part series. Yeah. Well, the other category of food stuff that I think does get stolen is if somebody has like a bunch of Greek yogurts that are wrapped that you paid money for that are, you know, freshly swiped. You know what you're getting. You shouldn't be doing that either.
Hmm.
But but I do think that there's sort of like a time limit. If your cake in there, Jen, has been sitting there long enough, what you've really said to everybody is you don't want the cake. And then it becomes communal property after a certain point. If I were king, and I do want to be king someday, and they came to us and said, hey, we caught Jen stealing cake. And then I would say, Jen, how long was the cake in there? And you'd say, it was in there 3 days. Nobody touched it. I would say, it's fair game.
Ah.
Maybe not 3 days, maybe 4 days. It would depend on circumstances. But I think at some point, what you've said to everybody else is you don't want it anymore.
I mean, if everybody saw that a cake was gone, I'd be the first person they'd probably point to.
And how embarrassing, though. I mean, if you do find out who the person is, it's just so disrespectful to your classmates. You know, it's just like, that's just bad form.
It definitely is hard, though, being here overnight, just because everything is closed down. And
wait a second. Wait.
You are way too tempted by this. I mean, I've been hungry before. I have never once, and I'm not holier than anybody.
You have to pack a huge lunchbox to do an overnight, though, at a radio station.
So you're kind of nosing through the fridge going, oh, man, those chicken wings look good.
No, I bring my construction worker cooler, like the big thing filled with tons of snackies. But yeah, like if you're not prepared for that, you're just up a creek.
Tim, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good. Talk to me.
I was a manager of a plant, paper-making plant, that had another dozen employees. And we had a lunchroom. My wife always made the best sandwiches ever, not peanut butter and jelly or bologna. She made great sandwiches with lettuce, tomatoes, and cheese on Kaiser rolls. And I always look forward to lunch. And someone started stealing them every day. So what I decided to do was put hot sauce, both sides, The idea was that when I saw some employee continually running to the water fountain,
sure,
I'd know who did it.
Absolutely.
But I never caught nobody, but they never took my lunch again, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'm glad that worked, but just never knew who was doing it, huh?
Never did, and it bugged me that I couldn't find out. I just knew I would.
Wow.
And they kept running to the water fountain, but they bared with it, but they never stole my lunch again.
Thanks for the call, man.
Take care.
Have a good day. This texter says, John, not to throw your old producer, Matt Bubala, under the bus, but he told the story one time about taking a Coke from the WGN refrigerator because he was really thirsty and replaced it with a note the next time. So I guess you put a note saying, hey, I swiped your soda, I'll be good for it next Tuesday. Wimpy.
That's something we do have a few of in the refrigerator right now. Leftover Cokes and iced teas from one of our events.
I think those are fair game.
Yeah, I keep drinking the tea.
You are, though. You're not full-time here, are you? I mean,
No, and I sure am hoarding a piece of pecan pie in my booth right now, so.
Somebody sent us a screen grab of a note at a company. It says, to the person that took my breakfast glass bowl with blue lid with shredded meat inside, you missed the bag of broccoli that goes with it. Far more enjoyable that way. Bummer you missed it. Obviously, you need it more than I do. Could you please return the bowl, preferably cleaned? Also, in the future, I will be spitting and or adding breast milk to the food I store in the refrigerator. It'll be a mystery. Happy trails. So there's that. Yeah, but at least you want the dish back, huh? Dave, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
It's Dan.
Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Yeah, King John or King Solomon. I want to know, like, I'm a visitor to a company. I'm an auditor, and a lot of times people leave out candy or pastries on a dish.
Right.
Mainly for the workers. Right. But if you're a visitor, is it okay to take one, or is that theft?
I think I've run into that question myself interdepartmentally here. If sales has pizza or snacks brought in, and I'm in programming, can I? And you go, hey, sales, what's going on? And you walk in there and take some of their food. Gang, what's the ruling on that? Jen, you seem to be sort of more involved in food theft than the rest of us. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, if another department is having food, you don't take it until they put it in the communal kitchen and offer it to everybody else.
How about you're an auditor and you're auditing a company and you're there working for them, but you're not of them?
You know, if somebody's got it on their desk, they're obviously pushing it out, so they want it gone. Go ahead and take it.
I think if it's on the desk out, then anybody can grab some. I think you're safe.
If they yell at me, can I say, well, King John said it was okay?
Yeah.
Can I use you?
Technically, he didn't. I did.
I did shop this decision out, but yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah, go ahead and give it a shot and let us know if they fire you or, you know, hit you over the head with a stick or something. All right, Dave?
Okay.
Or like the look of death. Like, what did you just take?
I know. Hey, Bill, it's John. You're on the air. What can I do for you, Bill?
Yeah, I used to work for a place where a guy would bring a brown bag lunch in every day and put it in the community refrigerator. And people kept stealing the whole bag. So one day he got smart and he told me about it. He said, he took a small plastic container and he put some brown-looking stuff in it and wrote on the top of the sign, stool sample for Dr. So-and-so. No one ever stole his lunch again. He did find his lunch sitting on the table, though, when somebody found the bag.
Oh, I got it. So there wasn't a stool sample in there. It was whatever his lunch was.
Just whatever his lunch was, right? Yeah,
that's
he did
bad.
That. He just added that to it. He just said, put it in with the lunch bag, you know, you might go and put it in the refrigerator to keep it cool, you know, for us.
But then you get a note from HR saying, hey, Bill, we don't put your stool sample in the communal fridge. But
but it cured it stopped that theft.
Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Have a good day.
I have one. I had a ginger ale in the fridge one day, and for like 2 days, I saved it for the next day, and the next day it was gone, and it was for my stomach aches, and I was really upset, so whoever you are, I expect an apology. Thank you.
Boom. 616, Lou Malnati's pizza left for 24 hours is fair game in company fridge.
Cool.
That's a rule. John, try putting ranch dressing in the communal fridge and see how fast that goes. Why does everybody love ranch? 269, somebody kept stealing my sandwich, so I salted the hell out of one of those, and they stole that one, too. Then
gross.
I bought a mini fridge. Yeah, a lot of you are into poisoning. Somebody said put Visine in the sandwich. That'll upset somebody's stomach. There's all sorts of ways to punish the theft. John, not quite a lunchroom story, but my grandfather told me in Galena, Illinois during the Depression, they would go steal watermelons from local farmer fields, and then one day they came across a sign that said, "The farmer, I've poisoned one of the watermelons, and only I know which one it is." So my grandfather and his friends put a sign up the next day, and they said, "They also poisoned one, and you don't know which one it is, farmer." These sound apocryphal, don't they? They're good stories. They don't even have to be true. I had a sandwich stolen on the job, so I started making two. I was always taken. One was always taken, never found out who. It went on for a few years. You ended up feeding somebody else at work every day. At least that guy didn't take both of them. And by the way, I'll bet it's a guy. I'll bet that 89% of the thefts, maybe 93% of the thefts are guys. You think I'm right on that? Is that your feel for that, campers?
Yeah.
John, I had a sandwich stolen at the job, so I started making two. I read that one. At our house, leftovers brought home from restaurants are fair game after 24 hours. Another rule. No, 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 no. Never does a visitor take food that is sitting out unless you are offered. I don't know if that last caller is still listening. 773 says you are not supposed to take food if you're not a regular employee. John, refrigerator cleaning every Friday at our office. One of you told me that you brought in a potluck dish for an event that evening. You put it in the fridge. It was Friday. They threw it right in the garbage.
Oh.
I have a story about a potluck. This was years ago. The station I was working at, we had a potluck. And I was working nights. And I went to the grocery store on my way home from work, bought a nice pie, chocolate pie. And I got home and I was watching TV. And I just kept thinking to myself, oh, man, that pie is going to be so good. It's going to be so good. I'm like, well, if I just go and take a little sliver of it now, I'll just bring it tomorrow, and people will just think somebody took a slice of it.
That's okay.
Right. And it was my pie. So I did that. I went and brought it in. Somebody saw me bring it in, and they thought I brought a leftover pie there. And no one touched it. I brought the pie home.
Aww.
Well, you did bring leftover pie.
It was leftover
from you. But, yeah, was it a French silk pie?
It was.
Oh, man.
God, it was so good.
That's one of the best foods on earth. You cannot be asked to not have a sliver of French silk pie.
It was my own fault because I bought it on the way home thinking, all right, well, then I won't have to stop on the way there. That was my first mistake.
That was your first mistake.
And it's French silk pie. Even if there's a piece missing, it's still French silk pie.
If there was only a sliver left, I would take that sliver.
Right?
I would, too. I don't know why people wouldn't touch it, but they wouldn't.
Lucky you, though. I mean, that worked out. You learned a valuable
lesson.
Win-win. That's what I'm thinking. And finally, Carl, you're on WGN. What did you want to say, Carl? You're on the air.
Hey, hi. I used to always go out for pizza with my buddies, you know, years ago, and I'd bring home the leftovers to bring to work. And then my sister would always take the leftovers to work instead of me, so... One day I said, okay, you know, I was at Luminati's or Nancy's Pizza or something like that. So one day I lifted up the cheese and I poured a whole thing of the crushed red peppers on the pizza. Then I put the cheese back down.
Oh, wow.
Thinking that she was going to take it to work. And it turns out my dad took it to work. And he was a mailman and he was taking a break in his car, you know, parked along one of the side streets in Chicago. And then he got a mouthful of hot peppers. He said he drank a whole thermos of water, all he had. It was pretty funny.
Oh, the stories, you folks. You're inventive. I'll give you that. And vengeful. What a fun crowd. We'll move on to other things. I want to talk about the Bill Daly story in just a couple of minutes. And then we'll talk about the Jeff Bezos story after 2. Also on the 2 o'clock hour, our Bright Side of Life segment. We've got some fun things to do. And what a great hockey game last night. My wife said to me, boy, Kevin really is excited about the Blackhawks game this evening because I guess he was getting all amped up about it. The Blackhawks had won 5 straight. Could they win 6 straight? Particularly since they were playing the Canucks last night. And lo and behold, they won that game. So instead of going down 5 points, they're now just 1 point outside of the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, it was a real good game last night. We'll talk a little bit of sports maybe with Kevin after the 2 o'clock hour. Baseball is considering a couple of rule changes, one of which I think is really clever, and you may not agree with it, but I think it might be a good idea. We'll talk about that in the next hour. But about that conversation we were having about people stealing people's food at work, I guess, school, wherever it is you spend your communal day. I guess the only way to read this text is this thread is that they must all at this one place of employment kind of eat lunch together and eat lunch the same way. The guy posts, I used to mess with a coworker by waiting till his lunch was done microwaving and then beating him to the kitchen and throwing it in the trash. I started this trend and the whole workplace followed suit. The prank got wildly out of hand and memos were eventually sent out to stop it. Eventually, the people were just going into the kitchen during office hours and throwing people's food in the trash outside. It was mob mentality. No one ever got mad because we all wanted an excuse to order takeout. We started packing terrible lunches because we knew what would happen. But if you put your foot in the food in the microwave and then stayed to guard it, you would be chastised and shamed. So the game had some structure to it. Anyway, the thing that led to the company-wide memos declaring the game illegal was pretty awesome. This guy who worked in HR put his lunch in the microwave knowing full well what he was risking by doing that. Lunch in the trash, etc. So this guy walks past me and my coworker and angrily says something along the lines of, don't touch my lunch, I'm serious. Like, come on, dude. First, it's a fun game. Second, go screw yourself. Third, please excuse me while, in fact, I now go destroy your lunch. That was a weird game that they cooked up at that place of employment. Anyway, the thread continues. So we went into the kitchen and we ripped the microwave with his lunch cooking inside out of the wall and threw the entire microwave onto the lawn. And the guy went nuts. He turned into the adult equivalent of a sobbing baby with poop-filled diaper. Later that day, the memo went out and the game ended forever. I don't work there anymore, but not because of that. So, workplaces can take on their own sort of juvenile, I guess, attitude.
That's kind of extreme.
Really extreme.
That hasn't happened here. We just got a memo saying, hey, it's a communal fridge, but the food inside it is not. And that's really all you need to say. And you should install cameras. You should totally have a camera in the company cafeteria. I think just that and a little sign saying you're being videotaped, that's got to be legal, right? You can videotape the lunchroom.
We have cameras in our booths, for crying out loud. We should have cameras on the fridge, too.
We're streaming this conversation online right now. If you go to WGNradio.com, you can watch us.
I got a text message in the middle of this conversation. The creamer isn't communal.
Is it the person
and then
that did it?
Yeah,
he or she said, how is that not communal?
Yeah, if you ask Eric Rung, it kind of is. And Jem covets other people's condiments and food stuff, so maybe it is.
Just the birthday cake that sits there for 2 weeks.
Do you remember last week there was the story about whether or not Mike Madigan and some of his ilk would load the ballot so that they would have a better chance of winning the election? Here's what you do. You're Mike Madigan. Everybody goes, oh, Mike Madigan, he's terrible. He's an awful guy. Let's get rid of him. Why does he keep winning the election? Especially when sometimes there are really credible candidates that run against him. And in one case, there's this guy named Jason Gonzalez we interviewed last week who went to an Ivy League school. He's got an advanced degree. He's doing community work. He ran into some trouble as a kid. He set himself straight. And he just seems like the kind of guy that would be a good politician. His last name is Gonzalez. Madigan works in a largely Hispanic district now. The gerrymandering and the communities themselves have changed over the years. So how is it that Madigan, that awful Mike Madigan, keeps getting reelected in a district that ethnically is not like him? And politics can be ethnic in the city of Chicago. One of the things they do is they'll say, okay, if I'm running against a credible candidate named Gonzalez, we'll go ahead and get some other people to run, like Rodriguez, or people with other similar-sounding names. And if we get enough names on the ballot, it'll dilute all of the other votes, and then the one strongest candidate will win. You see how actually having more people on the ballot will increase your chances. It's kind of weird, though, that a candidate who's the front runner would work to get more competition, but they do that, literally finding the candidates, helping them get the signatures to be on the ballot, etc. Sounds unethical, doesn't it? When I get to be king, that's going to be against the law. And the Tribune story about this not that long ago, they described, I just want to read for you again, I read part of this the other day. They say the district's population is about 60% Latino in 2011. Madigan said he was not concerned about Gonzalez's challenge because the speaker enjoyed widespread support among the Hispanic people in the district. Celebrity voice impersonated. Parayka, the attorney, then asked Madigan whether he had reached out to any political allies to try and load up the ballot with candidates. And Madigan said, I don't remember that. Is it possible that you did? Parayka asked. No, Madigan responded. Oh, so you're certain that you didn't do it? Parayka asked. I don't remember, Madigan said. Don't you think that if Don't you love the circuitous nature of those responses? All you got to do when they've got you is just say, I don't remember. I don't remember. Maybe I broke the law. Maybe I didn't break the law. I just don't remember. I would remember. I would remember if I asked somebody to get a candidate to run against me. I would remember that sort of thing. But he just throws out the, I don't know. I don't remember. In fact, they said that in the course of the deposition or whatever this was, this case, he said it like 1,000 times. Okay, my exaggeration there. But that was pretty much what they did. When they were busted, they would just go, I wouldn't remember. I'm reading the story about Bill Daley, Todd Leidy's story in the Chicago Tribune. Now, why is this a big deal? Bill Daley's running for mayor. He's one of the Daleys. Seems like just about every time there's a mayoral race coming around, somebody named Daley is running for mayor of Chicago. What was it? Something like 15 of the last 17 mayoral elections in Chicago have featured somebody named Daley. So there's another one. But he says, but you know, I'm the reform candidate. We've got to clip the power that some of these people in this city have. And I guess that's why the story of his maybe cheating on the insurance test in 1973 has come up. I mean, this case has been adjudicated, right? We've already had this thing in court. It goes back to 1973, and we aren't just discovering this, but the Tribune has resurfaced the story because if you want to be the guy who says we don't need corruption, we don't need power, we don't need inside jobs, we don't need these aldermen with their little fiefdoms. If we need to sort of distance ourselves from that, let's look at who's saying that. And Bill Daley, guess what? When you took the insurance exam in Illinois in the early 70s, you flunked it the first time. When you took it the second time, it looks like you flunked it as well. But what happened is somebody went to the home of the guy that issued the exam. It was in Springfield. The guy that gives the exam collects all the exams. One of them was from Bill Daley. He takes him back to his apartment in Springfield, wherever he lives. And then a buddy of his shows up and he says, hey, can I look at that one? It's got like 140 exams there, but he has to see just one. And it's the one of Bill Daley. And then the charge goes. He was looking at those answers and noticed that about five of them were wrong. Or no, five or six of them were incomplete. And one of them was just wrong. And so with a different pen, in different ink, with different slanted handwriting, this other person changes the answers on Bill Daley's insurance exam. And then they turn it in. And now he goes from what would have been a 55, so it looks like he was going to flunk it the second time, to a 75, and now he passes, and now he gets to practice the business of insurance in the state of Illinois, which when you're named Daley and you're living on the south side of Chicago, you can do pretty well. Contracts come your way, lo and behold, and life is good. But you got to have that, you got to pass that test first, and he does. The guy that was charged with correcting his test went on trial, and the first witness was Bill Daley. So now, Bill Daley, did this happen or not? Prosecutors asked Daley if he left any answers blank on the test, and Daley said, I don't recall. Doesn't this sound like the way you do it in Chicago? If you took a test, it's the second time around, kind of embarrassing, you're a Daley, you didn't pass it the first time. Now you really got to get it right. And you still don't know the answer to five or six of the questions. You leave some of them blank. How are you going to pass if you just leave them blank? Don't you think you remember that? And it wasn't years later, it was the test that he had taken. They said, did you leave any of the answers blank on the test? And he says, I don't know. I don't recall. They asked if the handwriting in the disputed answers was his, And Daly replied, well, it may or may not be. I can't judge. Don't you think you would recognize your handwriting? If somebody wrote in different handwriting answers on your test that you wrote in your own hand, don't you think you would know or recognize? When asked if the handwriting and the disputed answer was his, Daly replied, It may or may not be my handwriting. I can't be sure. I'm not an expert, he said. yes, you are. You are an expert in your handwriting.
And the right answer would have been, yes, it was my handwriting.
Right. If you're, I know. If you're going to lie, just lie. That's an interesting point because I don't know, I don't remember, I can't tell, is as much a lie as it was all me. I picked up a different pen.
Right.
My hand was sore, so I started writing the other way. I don't know. If you're going to lie, at least do it right. But I don't know is the same non-truth as I did it all is. They're both lies. They're both not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know that you left those blank. You know you didn't know the answer. And you can tell that somebody else put the answers there for you. Now, Daly was not charged and was not found guilty of a crime. The guy who allegedly did that was charged with the crime. Daly was testifying at the trial for the guy who was charged with fixing the answers. But that's what you do in Chicago. You just say, I don't know. I don't remember. And that seems to work.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Hi.
Here's John Williams.
Okay, that wasn't a big thought, but hi. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast, Judge the Best in the City of Chicago. The gang really got rascally. The Mincing Rascals minced yesterday, and we just put that up last night around 5 o'clock or so. It's another roundtable discussion with some of the really smart people at the Chicago Tribune and some of the really smart people here. Search for and enjoy the Mincing Rascals. So it seems to me like this Bezos story has at its heart is that catch-and-kill policy of theirs politically motivated. I didn't even know about the phenomenon of newspapers, tabloids, whomever, telling somebody, hey, you've got a story. We want exclusive rights. Here's $10,000 or here's $100,000. You've caught the story. But then instead of publishing it, you kill it. That way it never sees the light of day. Now, you may do that because, in fact, you shouldn't have paid for it. It's not a legitimate story. Or it may be just a way to silence something for whatever reason. Weird that a journalism organization would do that. But is that catch-and-kill policy politically motivated? Now, the Inquirer parent company, this AMI, wants Jeff Bezos and Washington Post to stop looking into that question. Did AMI catch-and-kill some stories that would have been politically embarrassing for the president? Did they help him out? They want Bezos to say, first of all, we're going to stop looking into that issue. And number two, that there was no political motivation. And by the way, if you don't, we're going to release embarrassing photos about you, Jeff Bezos. And rather than deal with that privately, Bezos blogged on Medium. He said, hey, I'm being shook down. At least that's the way I understand the story. Writing about it, the Washington Post is Margaret Sullivan. Margaret, this is John Williams, and you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm well, John. It's great to talk to you and your audience.
Is that a fair summary of where we are right now?
It is. I think that, you know, the one piece of it is really the investigation that the National Enquirer is trying to shut down is Bezos' own investigation with his investigators, as far as I know, rather than anything the Washington Post is trying to do. And, you know, there really is an editorial wall there between our owner and our editorial, decision making and so on. They're pretty separate. But otherwise, I think you summarized it well. And it's a really... it's a really bizarre situation in which Bezos has done, in my mind, a very tough-minded and courageous thing by saying, you can't actually shake me down because I'm going to get out in front of it. I'm going to reveal myself, you know, everything there is, although he didn't publish any photographs. They have embarrassing images of him. And, of course, you know, no one wants those to be printed in the National Enquirer or anywhere or anywhere else. But what he refused to do was to accede to their demands and say something that he believes may not be true and get involved in their, basically, their blackmail and their extortion scheme. So, you know, Bezos is my overall big boss, I suppose you could say, because he owns the Washington Post. But my view is quite separate from that, that he's done something pretty admirable here by standing up to the National Enquirer.
Well, can you help me understand the difference between a Washington Post investigation and a Bezos investigation?
Well, this is Bezos' own investigation, paid for by himself privately with his own investigators, of what, you know, how the National Enquirer got the text messages that he sent to this woman who he's been involved with extramaritally. It's not, to my knowledge, about a Washington Post, you know, reporting investigation, but rather his own investigation done with his own investigators and his lawyers and so on.
But then the Enquirer, their parent company, are saying they're outraged by that, and so then they're just playing their ace, which is, hey, dude, we'll publish those photos. This doesn't have much to do then with Donald Trump. Do I understand that correctly?
You know, some people think it does, that the Enquirer and Trump have been very close throughout the past couple of years, certainly because Trump's personal friend, whose name is David Pecker, who is the chairman of AMI, you know, he and Trump have been social friends, and also the Enquirer has been very much on Trump's side. They were one of the few newspapers in the country to endorse his presidential run. You know, very, just a handful did that. They have participated in this thing that you described, John, this catch and kill of stories that could have damaged Trump because they were women ready to talk about their affairs with him. The Enquirer essentially bought the rights to those stories and then buried them. And so that's come out in recent months. So there's been a very tight bond, certainly, between the Enquirer and Trump. But there's no particular reason to think right now, at least not that I know about, that this newest chapter has anything to do with Trump. It, you know, it may turn out to, but we don't know that right now.
In other words, this whole chapter could have happened irrespective of that. They could have simply had embarrassing photos about a famous billionaire, but I'm trying to figure out what they would have wanted from
him. You're right, and I mean that's the mystery here. I just don't want to go too far in speculating that it is about Trump, because it is only speculation, and I guess I'd rather stay close to what I actually know.
Yeah, imagine that.
But it's curious.
Yeah.
It's curious to think about, you know, why they would go so far and do such a dangerous thing in threatening and perhaps extorting, you know, someone like Jeff Bezos, who has tremendous resources. He's the richest man in the world.
Well, and leaving a digital trail, which seems kind of stupid to me. Maybe they thought that he wouldn't be so open and brazen about it. Does this remind you in any way of what David Letterman did when he was extorted?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I hadn't thought about Letterman. What I had been thinking about was, believe it or not, for those of us who've seen the musical Alexander Hamilton, there once was an effort to blackmail him, and he did something similar. He went ahead and printed himself the very allegations about an affair he was having that were being used to threaten him. So I guess this is a technique that comes down through the centuries and the decades.
What's the next step, do you think? What happens now?
Well, the Enquirer and its parent company have said, oh, gee, you know, we didn't mean to do anything in bad faith. We think that we were simply negotiating with Mr. Bezos. But now that you say that it's extortion or blackmail, we, the board of AMI, will take another look at this, do our own investigation, and see if it, you know, if it's something that requires action. And separately, you know, it's a very complicated situation, but the federal prosecutors have given immunity to David Pecker in this case involving Trump's fixer, Michael Cohen. And now, you know, in order to have that immunity, they had to stay out of legal trouble. Does this thing now put them in legal trouble and therefore sort of abnegate the immunity that they had? So that's on the table, too.
Margaret,
there's a lot that's kind of developing.
Margaret Sullivan's on the line, the media columnist for the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos. Lots of texts about this. 815 says, isn't blackmail or extortion against the law? Shouldn't they be prosecuted? You just used the word negotiated. Can you talk about that?
Right. Well, certainly Jeff Bezos is portraying this as an effort to blackmail him. It certainly seems like it. I mean, he published the emails from between his representatives and those from AMI or the National Enquirer. He characterizes them as an effort to extort or blackmail. Whether that meets a legal standard, you know, which creates criminality, you know, I can't say, but it certainly, you know, it certainly is, in my mind, from a journalistic perspective, more than unethical.
Well,
it's not anything that any respectable journalistic organization would do. Whether that rises to the level of criminal behavior is not for me to know.
I just want to ask you one last question about then Bezos' stand and how tempting it would be to swallow this or how courageous this is to stand up as he is. But in your reporting on this, you say, this is in quotes, the Washington Post poised to publish unsubstantiated rumors of the National Enquirer's initial report. I wanted to describe to you the photos obtained during our news gathering. That's them to him. And I'm like, that doesn't sound like a negotiation. I mean, come on.
I want
to describe to you the photos. So they didn't show him the photos, but they said, here's what we're looking at. And wow, that's not a negotiation to me.
No, it isn't. And to call it negotiating in good faith, I think, strains our credulity. So, you know, I think that Bezos is on a solid footing here.
So how bad is this for Bezos? I mean, you know, billionaires operate on a different planet. I think a lot of us expect the weirdest or quirkiest from them. Really, think about the billionaires you know, and or we know of. And
I do know some.
They're stocked full of peccadilloes and embarrassing transgressions. And so if there's naked pictures of him and some beautiful Fox News anchor from California, whatever. I'm not going to look at him. Whatever.
Well, you know, much of the news of Jeff Bezos's affair with Lauren Sanchez had already come out, and he had already he and his wife Mackenzie had already announced their divorce. So to some extent, you know, now they hadn't published these intimate photographs that they have, and that was the leverage that they hoped to use here. But you know, I mean, I think that by saying, you know, he in his blog post, he allows these photos to be described. I mean, I don't know how much more, as you say, people sort of understand that people have a private life. Maybe it's not any kind of relationship advice we'd like to take, but we all understand that, you know, there's a lot of skeletons in a lot of different closets.
Well, look at the embarrassment that the president has survived. So would the Enquirer, is it conceivable they would actually publish pictures of these pictures would actually be in their newspaper?
Well, that's what they were saying they were going to do. I don't know that you know, I don't know that they've ever gone that far before, but that's certainly what the threat was.
Makes me want to subscribe to the Washington Post, I'll tell you that. I mean,
we would welcome you.
I've said this many times on this radio show. If you don't already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper. We need to support journalism. Margaret Sullivan is a media columnist at WAPO. Margaret, nice to talk to you. I hope you can join us again. Thanks for your time and reporting today.
Thanks very much, John. Thanks for having me.
Jolene. I haven't seen Dolly Parton in a while.
Please don't take him just because you can.
Been watching clips of her this week as they get ready for the Grammys.
Your beauty is beyond compare.
Going to be honoring her, and sounds like the send-up they're planning is really going to be good.
And eyes of emerald green.
I'm Michael Heidemann, a producer here at WGN Radio. You hear his voice sometimes late in the evening on WGN with Patty and the Gang is on line 7. Hey, Mike, it's John.
Hey, John, great to hear from you.
Where are you, man?
I am here at O'Hare Airport in the bustling world of Chicago's transit unit, just on my way to Los Angeles to go and check out the Grammys this year.
So are you going to be in the audience for the Grammys?
Yes, I will be there live in the audience for the Grammy Awards. I'll be doing some press interviews as well a little bit before the show and trying to see, you know, what's going on in Los Angeles around that time. It's such a great time to be in the city, too, because there's so much music going around, and every single person you ever want to speak to, I mean, I know you're a music fan yourself, are right there in like a 1 mile radius. So it's awesome.
So are you going to be just like agog? I mean, because God bless you, Michael, you're going to be in the audience for the Grammys. Dolly or J-Lo or somebody might walk right by you, right?
Oh, my. It would be a dream to have J-Lo walk right by me. Yeah, it's very true. It's you know, this was kind of like a mission of mine for a while. I've always been into music. I do the Sound Sessions podcast on WGN Radio. And now getting the chance to go and actually check out the Grammys has been just a lifetime dream. And I've been working about 2 years in the process to get to this point. So I'm very, very excited to be there this year.
So what are you expecting? What's going to be the headline?
John, it's going to be the biggest Grammys maybe of a lifetime, and I'm not only saying that to be hyperbolic, but I'm saying that because they've increased the 84 categories, many of the main categories, from 5 to 8 nominees. There's going to be huge performances, like you mentioned, Dolly Parton, who is one of the greatest country music legends of all time, is going to be there performing with Kacey Musgraves, Maren Morris. Florida Georgia Line is going to be there tributing her. The album of the year... Katy Perry? I mean, come on. Where do you get to see a concert like that? It's once in a lifetime.
You got to pick for record of the year, album of the year, song of the year?
So this is crazy because it's kind of a matter of who will win versus who should win. Album of the year is obviously the biggest thing of the night. There's eight members who are artists who are in that category. You know, everything from Beer Bongs and Bentleys, from Post Malone to Dirty Computer by Janelle Monáe, to the Black Panther soundtrack, which was curated by Kendrick Lamar with some original songs, as well as Cardi B, who is the person of the hour right now with Invasion of Privacy. But I feel like, above all things, I feel like Kacey Musgraves' Golden Hour might take it home because she's been such a darling in the country music community. But obviously, I feel like, after being overlooked last year, Kendrick Lamar's Black Panther album should have taken the cake because he's overdue for accolades now. He won Best Rap Album last year with Damn, but I feel like, you know, the Grammys are making a conscious effort into including more people, but it's kind of like, where does the wave turn at the time? What's the hot flame that they're trying to, you know, ignite at the moment?
I don't want you to miss your plane. We can hear that chatter in the background. So let's do this, Michael. You catch that flight. You go to Los Angeles. Are you going to then be on with Steve or Bill or Wendy or us maybe on Monday?
You know, if you guys want some Grammy coverage, give me a call. I'm more than available for you all here at WGN.
We'll look for you on TV, man. And in the meantime, have a great time and let's visit on Monday, okay?
That sounds great. Thanks a lot, John.
Michael Heidemann works at WGN Radio producing shows. He does a podcast about the music biz, and lo and behold, he's going to the place to be.
Oh, do you believe
in life
after love?
I can feel... First of all, hi, this is John Williams. It's 2:38 on WGN Radio. We're live streaming on Facebook. Hi, Facebook. Make sure you like WGN Radio or WGN King John on Facebook. Like WGN King John on Facebook. Jen DeSalvo's in the studio, too. Hi, Jen. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
All right, on Fridays, about this time, we're getting ready for our Bright Side of Life segment. That's where you'll call in. Tell us something good in your world while you're smiling, and we'll smile with you. 312-981-7200. You can call or text right now. Before we do that, though, we do something fun to do in the Chicago area over the weekend. And Elif always starts us off with some music. What do you got?
Now I know you know who this is.
Oh, no, it's obviously Cher, and I forgot the whole auto-tuning thing, which is just so fun. This is auto-tuning, right? That's what this is?
I hope so.
It's pretty cool. No, I don't know if that's auto-tuning.
I have no idea.
Auto-tuning? Ooh, you know, that's auto-tuned.
I would venture to guess that.
All right, so why are we listening to this?
Because she's going to be at the United Center tonight at 8, and her performance is going to feature some elephants and burlesque and some nods to great artists, great other artists of our time, and your time probably mostly.
Uh-huh. So this is not a Cher impersonator. This is Cher?
Cher herself.
Wow. How old is she?
In her 70s.
Yeah.
In your time? I don't know.
I know, really.
No.
I think you're near there.
I heard that.
No, I'm saying that she is nodding to some great artists of your time.
Sure. That's the way I heard it.
So tickets start at $119, okay, at Ticketmaster.com. And they go up to like 400-something.
When the Sonny and Cher show came on the first time back in the day, back in my time, she was so good. That was so much fun. She was so sexy. She could sing so well. I thought the skits were funny, the whole thing. I was a big fan. Also going on this weekend, the first Blacks Chicago is a Black History Month concert celebrating Chicago's Black trailblazers and art inspired by those leaders. It takes place Sunday at the Chicago Cultural Center, 2 to 3:15. It's free. For more information, go to crossingbordersmusic.com.
Chocolate Weekend at the Morton Arboretum. It's tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Members and non-members, but it's free for members. Non-members do have to pay a fee. You can find out more information at mortonarb.org. There's free samples and more than 15 vendors to purchase chocolate from, and there's lots of samples, plus wine pairings. And members can beat all the crowds and actually go tonight for an early preview from 5 to 9.
John Cusack is talking about his film High Fidelity. They're screening the movie, and then he gives a talk afterwards. How about that? High Fidelity, John Cusack, Waukegan's Genesee Theater. That's Sunday at 6. I called him before the show. Tickets are still available. Cost you $52 to go. Details at GenesseeTheater.com.
Well, Valentine's Day is coming up, and we have a speed dating event, but it's held by the Chicago Animal Care and Control, and it's a speed dating adoption event. It's tomorrow, Saturday, February 9th, starting at 11 a.m., and participants can go through a rose ceremony to pick out their dogs and cats and choose them by giving them a little rose toy. For more information, chicago.gov/CACC or on Facebook, Chicago Animal Care and Control.
Chicago RV and Camping Show is this weekend at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. The Chicago RV and Camping Show, $12 to get in, $4 for the kids. Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 5. It's going this evening as well. Details at chicagorvshow.com.
Well, another show that has to do with that is the Chicago Auto Show. It kicks off this weekend. Starts actually tonight with the first look for charity, which there are still tickets to, at McCormick Place from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily through President's Day. Test tracks, test drives, fun concept cars. And I got to say, if you got to get there, you can take 31st Street off Lakeshore Drive to one of the parking lots at McCormick Place, or Millennium Garages in the Grant Park area are offering specials with free shuttles every 10 and 15 minutes. And Metro Electric has an express train coming out of Blue Island to McCormick Place every hour during the weekend.
By the way, on the sports lineup, the Blackhawks are going for 7 in a row when they play Sunday at home against Detroit at 2, pregame here at 1:30. What a great call John had last night on WGN Radio when they picked up number 6 against the Canucks. The Bulls are in Brooklyn at 6:30 tonight, and the countdown begins. We're 15 days away from WGN Radio's first spring training broadcast of the season. The Sox will take on the Dodgers. Our pregame will begin at 2 o'clock, and the first pitch is at 2:05. It's 15 days away, but isn't that nice to think about? Northwestern takes on Iowa at 5:30 on, I think, Sunday. DePaul travels to Xavier tomorrow at 7, and Loyola travels to Valpo at 3 on Sunday.
And DePaul women are at Sullivan Arena up in Lincoln Park at 2 p.m. on Sunday, so Red and Brown Line. I always default to telling you how to get there. The Red and Brown Line up
took
to Fullerton.
Took the Red Line up to the Loyola game the other night, It was a good trip. Okay, that's it. So, if you want to do some fun things this weekend in Chicago, it's cold, but there's still a lot to do. Now, the bright side of life. 312-981-7200. Call us right now. Hi, Facebook. We're live streaming on Facebook. You can message us on Facebook as well. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. Let's hear what your bright side is. Call or text 312-981-7200. Tell us why you're smiling. There it is. There's our little song.
Some things in life are bad.
All right, call me.
They can really make you mad.
312.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
981.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
7200. This is our bright side. This is what we do on Fridays. Give us some good news in the world.
Things turn out for the best.
Sing it home now.
And always look on the bright side.
I'm counting on you here, Kevin. Not my best. Always look on the light. Oh, I think that's about what we were hoping for.
That was better.
312-981-7200. Call or text. Give us some good news. We are live streaming on Facebook today. Like WGN King John on Facebook, and you'll be able to comment. I see several dozen of you have already done that. Let's start with the phone call. We're going to Margaret. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Margaret?
Hi, John. My bright side and the bright side of my entire family is that my brother, George Sullivan, after 29 years, is retiring from the Hanover Park Police Department, and we are celebrating tonight.
Oh, thank him for all of us for that, and have a great time tonight.
Excellent. Thank you.
Hey, Lily, you're on WGN. Give me some good news, Lily. Why are you smiling?
Hi. Hi, John. Hi. I'm smiling because tomorrow's my dad's birthday, and tonight he's taking me to a daddy-daughter dance.
That's awesome.
Dance well. That's a good dad. And Carl, you're on WGN. What's your bright side? Hi.
Hey, John. How you doing? Hope you're keeping warm. I'm going to go see a performance at College of DuPage this weekend. Not Hollywood, but Bollywood Boulevard.
I saw the write-up of that in the paper. Have a great time. All right, Jen, give me some good news. Why are we smiling?
Somebody in 847 says that they put their house on the market, and within 24 hours it was sold. We need some of that luck.
They should have used Amy Kite. Maybe they did. Got another one for me?
Heading to Ann Arbor to visit our daughter for Parents Weekend from 773.
Hey, Harold, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Harold?
I'm just happy that my grandson played in his first Super Bowl game last Sunday. The results aren't quite what we wanted, but they had a great year, and we hope to see him in the game again next year.
Did you call us before the game? Didn't you call a couple of weeks ago, Harold?
No, I didn't. I haven't never called you before.
Wow. So who's your grandson on the Rams?
Brian Allen, Hinsdale Central.
Wow. Well, congratulations. Yeah, listen, there's no shame in losing in the Super Bowl, my friend. You guys must have been very proud.
Very, very happy.
Oh, boy, Harold. Thanks for calling. Give him our best. Producer Elif on Facebook, what are we reading?
Kate says she finally rented her old house after 8 months.
Hey, hey, that's good news. You got another one?
I do. Nancy says, just got back from Outdoor Ed with 100 sixth graders. We had a blast despite the ever-changing weather, and our suburban kids learned it's fun to be outdoors in cold weather.
Remember, you can message on Facebook, WGN King John. Like me there. We're live streaming on Facebook.
Meadow in 312 says that she got a five-mile trail run in this morning on the icy trails of Kettle Moraine, which is up in Wisconsin. Meadow, find me on Facebook. We need to be friends.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm surprised. I thought that was you, actually.
Yeah,
that was
right?
a bogus one.
I'm not trolling you.
Melanie, you're on WGN. What's your bright side? You're on the air.
Hi, King John.
Hey.
Hey, I am driving to Springfield for the Illinois Drill Team Association State Finals. I'm one of the judges.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, Illinois Drill Team. You mean like drum and bugle corps, that sort of thing?
Oh, well, palm, dance, and flag.
Ah. Have a great weekend. Drive safely. Thanks for the call. Go.
So somebody said that despite this weather, their daffodils are 3 inches off the ground. But then somebody else says in 630 that they're happy to be moving to Tennessee at the end of June after all this weather.
You got another one for us, Producer Ella?
Yes, I do. And Annette says, my daughter is getting married and I paid off her dress with all my credit card points.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Nice.
What a commitment.
That's a lot of points. Always look on the bright side of life. Hey, John, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling?
Hello, John.
Hey.
During the polar vortex, none of my water lines froze and my furnace kept working.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we should not take that for granted. All right, Jen, your turn.
Linda in Naperville, my hubby is done with chemo. Now he just has to get stronger.
Terry, you're on WGN. What's your bright side? You're on the air.
Hi, John. I'm going to be a great aunt again tomorrow. I'm waiting for my new great niece to be born. So this is my seventh one coming, and so we're all excited.
I'm not surprised. Have a great time. Our best to the whole family. All right, Jen, your turn.
I get to spend my 70th. I can't talk. I get to spend my 70th birthday in Cancun.
This is, wow, that's nice. Which birthday is in Cancun?
70th.
Wow, good for her or him. Jane, you're on WGN. What's your bright side, Jane?
Hi, John. I love this segment so much every week. And my bright side today is my husband and I are celebrating our 49th wedding anniversary.
Good for you. Happy anniversary. Did you guys get married on Valentine's Day?
No, we got married on February 8th because he had to go into the service and was going to Japan.
Oh, wow.
So we had to get married. We couldn't wait for Valentine's Day. We had to do it a little earlier.
Thanks for the call. Well, my best to you both.
Thank you.
I'm such a stupid guy. Valentine's Day is always on February 14th, right?
Yes.
I was asking that, like, you know how Thanksgiving falls on a different day each year and Christmas? If today isn't February 14th, then the answer to the question, did you get married on Valentine's Day, is no, you dummy. It's not the 14th. But she didn't say that, and I really appreciate that. All right, your turn.
Celebrating dads with my sons who are new fathers at the auto show and the Blackhawks this weekend.
Yeah, no kidding. You want a bright side? Your Chicago Blackhawks might be in the playoffs. Kevin, are the Blackhawks going to be in the playoffs?
I think so. They're riding some big-time momentum right now, John. Just 2 points out of a wild card spot.
I was saying one, but since they won in overtime, they don't get 2 points. Is that what happens?
They get two, but they didn't gain... How would I put this? Vancouver also got a point as well. And so did the Blues, who have the second wild card spot.
Because if we had won in regulation, and we almost did, then we would be just 1 point out, right?
No, we'd still be two because the Blues won yesterday. So the Blues gained a point there.
Got it. Okay.
But the Canucks got a point. But last night at the UC, John, it was awesome.
It felt
like, you know, the Dynasty glory days. It was so much fun last night.
Six in a row, and could be seven this weekend, right? Six in a row?
Against the Red Wings Sunday.
Oh, man, what a game.
That's our
bright side.
That's our Blackhawks.
Give the audience a grin. I want to go to Tammy. Tammy, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Tammy? You're on the air.
I'm smiling because my son applied to 8 colleges and got accepted to all 8 and decided he's going to go to Florida State University on a Bright Future scholarship.
Wow.
Go Seminoles.
Congratulations. You know, if I applied to 8 colleges and one of them was Florida State, I think I'd go to Florida State.
Yeah.
If Vermont was like one of them, I'd go to Florida State. Elif is on the phone, so we won't have time to read more of your texts unless she does. You want to read a couple more of your messages to our Facebook Live feed?
Yes. Stephanie says that she went ice skating with her very fun daughter this morning.
Nice. I just love that.
And then Jeff says, I spent the Polar Vortex listening to Mincing Rascals podcast.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Mincing Rascals, wherever you listen to your finer podcast, the Mincing Rascals judge the best in the city. All right, one more from you, Jen DeSalvo.
815 says that they paid off their last tuition bill for their son and that they're adopting me and starting on mine. No,
nice.
That last part was not true. But they paid off their last tuition for their son.
Time for one more call, maybe. Ray, you're on WGN. What's your bright side, Ray?
My son Roger and his wife Megan just had a baby girl 2 hours ago.
Woo! Yeah.
You got a name for us?
Ella Shagrew.
Oh, is this as in Dan Shagrew?
This is Dan's brother Roger.
Attaboy, Roger!
Uncle Dan!
Well, thanks for sharing that. Good to hear from you, man.
Thank you. Have a good day, John.
On Fridays, this is what we do. It's called The Bright Side. You call in, tell us some good news in your world while you're smiling. And that feels good because now we're going to go to Rokan's show and then we're going to get all nervous and upset. There'll be a lot of anxiety and tension. There'll be great news and entertainment, but The Bright Side starts your week. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, all of you who followed us on this Facebook Live feed. It's sponsored by our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. We go from Studio D to Studio A. Hi, Rokan.
I got to tell you something, John. I just really don't understand this Bright Side thing that you do.
I know.
I just don't understand. And then people are happy, and they have thoughts, and they have like...
I love the segment.
They're celebrating things great and small.
Uh-huh.
And this, because they find joy, a word I am not familiar with, they find joy in just the simplest of things.
Yeah, and not angst and panic and
what?
Absolute outrage.
Anna, you deserve a raise.
I do. Thank you. Well, thank you for saying that publicly. I have a quick bright side, and it's not done yet, but it feels like the HQ2 for Amazon, since they may be moving out of New York, and we've got Governor Pritzker already on it saying, you know, we might want those jobs here. Let's see how that works.
JB, it's JB. Listen, I got a plan.
From one billionaire to another, we want you to move it here.
Both named JB. By the way, we do want the Amazon thing, right?
Well, I know there's been some. Yes. Yeah, I think the 25,000 jobs would be helpful for the budget situation we have.
We do. I think we do. We want that, and I think that just having that kind of a thing. But you know, we weren't in. I think that the final three. You know, so you gotta wonder.
We're in the final 10, weren't we?
I think we were. But you know, this is a good opportunity. He wanted a big city. He needs an airport. You get the busiest airport in the world and the new. And I got to tell you something. You know, when this whole election thing is done, I will tell you what I really think about Rahm Emanuel. It will really freak you out. But the this airport now, when they redo this, it's going to be sick.
Something special.
Did you see the models on that thing?
Yeah. It's already. Cool. It's. I mean, I already like the little things I've seen change. It's gonna be. It's gonna be amazing. And so that would be. I'm just saying. Back to you, JB. We're with you. Not you, JB. The UJB. We're with you. We think that the National Enquirer was doing you wrong.
Totally wrong.
They literally should not put pictures of your Winkie on in every supermarket in America. I'm with you on that.
That's right. Yeah. Mr. Pecker should not be showing those pictures. That he says he has.
Oh, the person. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.